Hello, hello, welcome and hello. This is the Cloud English Podcast. My name is Luke. It is February 4th and it's 2024, believe it or not. Hard to believe, I know. Well, we have a lot of things to talk about. Today we're going to be focusing on meeting people. That is the main topic for today. We're going to be going through some useful phrases for introducing yourself when you have a job interview. Yes, very important. And you can use a lot of the expressions, phrases, and words that we talk about for other types of introductions or, in fact, in other situations as well. We're also going to be talking about a point of confusion that I've noticed some people have, including native English speakers, and I want to clear that up, and then we'll get into some personal pet peeves around specific English usage that some native English speakers may or may not have, and we'll also talk a bit about icebreakers and having conversations using AI tools to practice. At this point, I feel like if you're not at least using some tools, you're behind, because there's so much you can do with these tools, and I'm going to show you an interesting way to use them. Okay. So let's say a few things here right at the start. If you haven't already done so and you enjoy watching or listening to the podcast, make sure to like, subscribe, follow, thumbs up, whatever you need to do, wherever you are. You can, if you're watching, listen. Those are in the links in the description, but the podcast, if you just search Cloud English, is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and where else? I heard that Google Podcasts, or Google's podcasting platform, has or is being sunset. I don't know if that's already happened there. Anywhere you can find podcasts. And if you're listening, hello audio listeners, thank you for listening. I appreciate that. You can watch the podcast on YouTube and Facebook and technically Twitch, although I don't know who goes to Twitch for an English podcast. I don't know. Probably not many. All right, so that's that. Let's see, what else do we have? If you are interested in getting a free course, you can do that in the links in the description. Grab the prepositions course, as well as a 30% discount on the yearly membership paid monthly. Check that out in the links in the description. That is actually a fantastic deal, in my opinion. And you can join the Discord community for free. That is a good way to reach out to me and stay up to date with everything I'm sharing and posting. Anytime a new video goes up, anytime a podcast goes up, anytime a course goes up, anytime anything happens, generally it will be shared there under the tab What's New? Which makes sense, right? That makes sense, I think. All right. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? I posted a short video on YouTube recently about the price of eggs and milk in New York State, where I live, in the Hudson Valley. And I was asking everyone to share how much eggs and milk cost around the world. Not everyone has, some people are just commenting on how expensive eggs and milk are where I live. But the thing that surprised me is the variety, the range is huge. In some places, it's actually significantly more than what I have to pay for eggs and milk. In some places, it's way less. The range is enormous. It's a crazy thing, right? It makes you realize that everything is relative, right? Cost of living is often very relative. I'm very interested in cost of living, because it's more of a feeling that you have about about how expensive it is to live, but that feeling that you have is dependent on a number of things. It's not just how much money you currently have. It's about also how much you make, and that factors in your spending habits, but then there's spending that is mandatory and required, but then there's, of course, also discretionary spending, optional things, things you may or may not need, right? But then the line between that is also very fuzzy. Sometimes you feel like you need something, and then if you really think about it, you realize you don't actually need that thing, and what you think you need, you don't actually need. So I'm always interested in the cost of living thing, just because I think it has a psychological basis. It requires you to think about what you need and what you don't need to live. There was a time when I left the United States to travel in Asia, and I had not that much money, and I had a backpack, and in that backpack, it was more of a rucksack, really, a bit bigger than a backpack, was everything that I owned in the world, and I felt totally content. I had an old phone, I had no possessions other than what was in my bag. Before I left, some of my stuff was stolen, and I found that to be, in fact, a relief. I thought, oh, good. This is one more thing I don't have to carry. And I was totally content. And I find that now I have more stuff. I look around at all this, some of this stuff, and I ask myself, how much of this stuff do I really need? What if I threw away all of it? I did an experiment with that when we left our apartment in New York City to move to the Hudson Valley. We threw away 95% of our stuff. And the process of doing that was very eye-opening for me about how much you can accumulate by accident. You buy a little thing, this little thing, and that little thing, and before you know it, you have this mountain of meaningless stuff. And so I vowed, when we moved, I vowed to try to prevent that from happening for myself, right? I can only control what I do, right? So I don't know if you've seen any of my videos where I'm not in front of this environment, but I'm in fact in a different room, which is the real room, let's be honest. It's totally empty, except for a little stack of books in the back and a little bean bag that the cats sleep on. And it's empty because I don't want any stuff. And I also try my best not to buy clothes that I'm not going to wear. I just don't like accumulating a bunch of crap. And still I'm accumulating crap. I'm trying not to, and still stuff keeps kind of piling up a little bit, but much less. And I would say it's much, much better than before. Being conscious about it has made a big difference. And it's just a matter of thinking through, I think, what things I'm actually going to use, not now, not immediately, but over the long term. So asking myself before I buy something, what is this for? Will I use it? Will I use it over the long term? And if it passes those filters, then I'll buy it. I need it. But if it doesn't, I would rather just not have it, you know? I asked myself this question with, I went to the Apple store yesterday, and I tried on the Apple Vision Pro. I demoed the Apple Vision Pro. And I asked myself the questions. Number one, I forget the questions. Do I need this thing? No. If I get it, will I use it over the long term? Maybe not. But I will say one thing about the Apple Vision Pro. It's a very interesting technology, and I'm more excited about what will happen with that technology in the next 5 years. The experience was pretty incredible. You put on this headset, and then you have a dial at the top. You dial the headset, and as you dial it, the immersion increases. So you're suddenly surrounded by an environment. In the case of my demo, it was a placid lake on the lake shore, the water lapping up against the shore, trees in the distance, a scattered rainstorm somewhere over the horizon. You can kind of see it moving. And it was surreal. I felt like I was actually there. I felt like I was sitting beside a lake. So if there's a continuum between looking at a video of a lake, right? You sit there and you look at a 4K video of a lake on the biggest screen you have. If there's a continuum between doing that, looking at a video of a lake on a big screen in 8K, and sitting in front of a lake, it was much closer on the continuum to sitting by a lake. It really was. And so that was incredible, and it made me realize what's going to happen with work. I don't know about education. It could be for people who attend lessons remotely, particularly university students, but especially for work, not having a computer and a little screen that you stare at, I feel like in 5 years that could be seen as kind of outdated and primitive almost. You put on your glasses or whatever it is that projects your environment, and you're wherever you want to be. You're in a co-working space in Switzerland. You're next to a lake. You're on the moon. You're in a lush jungle environment with gorillas hooting and hollering in the treetops. So when you can do that and immerse yourself, the experience of working is more relaxing, right? You're able to step away and have the distance between your mundane life and, or your, let's say, daily life. There's a work-life balance thing there, I don't know, where you can take a break while you're not actually taking a break, but have an environment that is kind of relaxing. It's interesting, right? And to have everything right there in front of you was a crazy experience. However, after about 15 minutes of trying it, the area under my eyes here, and I have weird eyes because my eyes are kind of sunken into my head in a weird way, which is disturbing to me and everyone who sees me, I think. Well, I started feeling it here. A lot of, like, it was pushing my skin down, and that was tiring pretty quickly. So I've heard if you use the top head strap, it's better. But what I really want is something that covers here that's extremely lightweight, that is easy to move around with, and that is fully immersive in that way. And I think that would be a game changer. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Okay. Well, let's get into our first thing. Again, great to have you here. If you have topics or things that you want to suggest, I would recommend doing that in the Discord. So major questions or topics or issues or whatever, pop into the Discord. You can message me directly if you like. Let me know what you want to hear more about, learn more about, things you're struggling with. I usually do take suggestions, quite honestly. Okay. Okay. So let's hop into our first topic. Let's hop into our first topic, shall we? When you go to a job interview, you will almost always be asked to talk about yourself. Well, how do you do that? In a way that sounds natural, that makes this person who's listening, whether it's a hiring manager or your future boss if you do get hired, someone from the team you may work with if you do get hired, how do you do this in a way that makes them say, wow, this person is a good fit. I want to work with them. Do you say, hello, my name is Luke. I love golf. I love looking at clouds. And I love macaroni and cheese. One of those things is true. But even if they were all true, that's not a good introduction for a job interview. Actually, it's not a good introduction at all. I'm going to walk you through how you can introduce yourself in a way that makes people say, wow, tell me more, I want to work with you, right? We're going to look at specific phrases and what those phrases accomplish. And we'll look at examples for how we can use those in a natural way, okay? So let's get directly into it. The first one is, how can you talk about your professional background? Well, hopefully you have a professional background, right? If this is, you know, your first job, then maybe this is not the right thing to do because you don't have a background, but I'm assuming that you do, okay? So the best way to do this is to say what your background is. Now, you want to probably assume that whoever is talking to you has looked at your resume or CV. And so when you say, I have a background in, you may want to give a little bit of context that's not in your resume or CV. So I have a background in digital marketing, having managed several online advertising campaigns in my previous role. And you could then go on to say a little bit more, right? So this may be a reminder because they've seen your resume or CV, or it may be I'm telling you something that you already know because you read my resume or CV. Here's a little bit more context. I managed online advertising campaigns in my previous role, right? At the company that you worked at. Oh, yes, I see that on your resume. Well, maybe that's just a little reminder, but a background in. Now, you can use this more broadly if you say something like, well, I have a background in working with regulators. Well, working with regulators is an activity that you did, right? And it's not a role. It's not just a field. It's a specific type of activity. Maybe your resume didn't even say that. Well, this is another way that I have a background in can be used very effectively. What you're doing for an introduction is you're talking about yourself in the context of the role, right? People often think they should just talk about themselves, right? Hello, my name is Luke. I come from this. No. You should connect your professional experience and skills to this position, this role, this company in a way that shows who you are and what you can do, right? Now, maybe you're talking about your experience or how you got started, right? The beginning of your career, because it highlights something about you, right? You might say, when I first started out, why would you say that? This is where you might show growth. This is where you might show how much you've learned or how far your career has gone. So I'm giving you the beginning point of my career, and then I'm going to tell you even more, or I'm going to tell you how I improved or changed or grew. When I first started out, I was a junior software developer at a small startup where I honed my coding skills in Python and JavaScript. Then I took that experience and worked in another startup, a bigger one, where we built da da da. So here you're showing a progression. And if you show a progression of skills and that I really learned this and I learned it a long time ago, that may make the employer or hiring manager say, okay, I can see that you continue learning. I can see that you continue getting better. That's potentially very impressive. Sometimes you want to talk about difficulties. Now, why would you talk about difficulties or challenges in an introduction? Well, if you're talking about your career, your working experience, what you've done, what you can do, talking about a challenge allows you to show how you deal with things, right? Because we all face challenges, we all face difficulties. And so if you're able to mention a challenge, you're adding a story element to your introduction that gives you a chance to highlight a thing about you that is maybe impressive or interesting. Have you ever seen an episode of a TV show or a movie that had no conflict, right? You're connecting with a person. You want them to be interested in you. You would never watch a TV show that where nothing happens, or they're just dancing around and singing and tossing flowers around and eating lollipops the whole episode. You want something bad to happen because that is what grabs you, makes it interesting, because you want to see how did they get through this. One of the biggest challenges I faced was leading a team through a critical project under a very tight deadline at Global Solutions. Maybe it's another one of the roles that you had that's on your resume or CV. Then you could maybe share a little bit about how you did that, right? As a leader, or I was new to leadership, what I did was I tried to, and then you can explain a little bit more about that challenge to highlight something about you, right? And this is just a simple little statement or sentence that you can use. One of the biggest challenges I faced was, again, this is very, very useful. Okay, how about growth? You want to show growth? You might say something like a position in the past, right? Again, you're talking about your work history. That position at job number three, right? That position pushed me to become more adaptable and really skilled in crisis management, because we always had these issues where something would come up. We only had a week to solve it. And if we didn't solve it, millions of dollars would be lost. And so we always felt like we were handling one crisis or another. And so crisis management is something that I learned, especially during really high pressure situations like this one, right? Now, I'm not saying a specific example, right? That's where we could use the last one we talked about, right? If you have a story element that is interesting, there you can say one of the biggest challenges that I faced, like we talked about. But if you want to talk about a job in general, and a common feature or characteristic of that job is, well, crisis management. It made me very adaptable. What did? That one thing that happened? No, that whole job. Oh, okay. So that's a good way to highlight something that you gained from a previous role. It's okay to say good things about yourself. What about achievements? What about things that you did that are great, right? Throughout my career, I have consistently exceeded sales targets by at least 20% each quarter. So if that's how good you are at sales, you should say that about yourself, right? Maybe not everyone is able to achieve something like that. It's an amazing ability. If you can do that, you must be very gifted. You must have a knack for sales. And so say it, right? Instead of saying, I am really good at this, right? Throughout my career, this says it didn't just happen once. This is something that's true for me. I have consistently exceeded. I have consistently performed. I have something that you have done over a period of time. Don't say, I'm really good at sales. No, this is much more specific. And it doesn't say something that's true about you only right now. It says something that is true about you and has been true about you for a long period of time. And when people hear that, they say, oh, wow, this is the skill that we've been looking for, right? This is what we want at this company. Another way to talk about talents or skills is to say that you have, as I mentioned, a knack. Now, knack and skill are a little bit different. If you have a knack for something, it means that it's kind of natural. To have a knack for something means that you didn't have to work as hard as others at it. You picked it up very easily. You may hear people say, oh, he or she has a knack for learning languages, has a knack for tinkering and figuring stuff out. To have a knack is a natural inclination that allows you to get better at something than more quickly than maybe others, right? It doesn't mean that they can't do it as well as you. It means it's a natural gift that you have. I have a knack for identifying customer needs and developing strategies to address them effectively. So I don't just think, what do I want to say? I think, no, what do the customers need? What are they really thinking about? Getting into their heads, right? Okay. And then figuring out then how to communicate with them so that when they hear me give my pitch as a salesperson, they say, well, yeah, that's exactly the problem we have. And this looks like the perfect solution. And that's why I'm such a good salesperson, right? Not me, actually. I'm not, but for example, right? Now, maybe you want to use your previous colleagues to provide some kind of social proof. Social proof is what you get with reviews, right? If you have a product and it has a bunch of reviews, or a course or something, and it has a bunch of good reviews, then that is social proof. That's not you saying how good something is. That's other people or someone you know saying how good it is. Well, unless I'm a liar, I can say that people I worked with would say something about me that is good. Hopefully I'm honest about that. My previous colleagues would say that I'm highly collaborative and always willing to offer support and guidance. Now, in the interview, at no point do they talk to my previous colleagues, right? But assuming that they, the interviewers, feel that you're somewhat honest, you can make a statement like this. But what you're doing is separating it from just, I think I'm very collaborative. No, I'm showing you what I think other people think about me, right? And that's different. It's a different feeling. It's a different flavor. So that can work very, very well. Sometimes we want to talk about work style, how we work, right? Well, that's important because if you're being interviewed by someone, they are potentially your future colleagues, your future boss. So they're going to be working with you. That's not just about your skills and achievements and things that you did before. It's also how you tend to work, right? I'm at my best when. This is not about performance, usually. This is not about an accomplishment of any kind. This is usually how I like to work, in what kind of environment, under what conditions I like to work, right? I'm at my best when working on challenging projects that require innovative thinking and team collaboration. So that shows I like to work with people rather than by myself. And I don't like to just sail through life doing nothing difficult, right? The challenge is what makes me enjoy work. Figuring something out, solving problems. I like that. I don't like a boring desk job. I like to be challenged, right? And I like to have to come up with solutions. I'm at my best. It means I'm comfortable working in that way. I like working in that way. That is my favorite way to work, right? So this is a really good phrase to use when you want to especially say something that's going to connect hopefully with the work style or working culture of this potential company or employer, right? Now, maybe you want to mention the thing about this company that is interesting to you. Why apply here instead of anywhere else? Well, maybe I did, but I want to zoom in on the thing about this company that is interesting, that draws me, that makes me want to work here, right? I'm not telling you to be dishonest. I'm saying this is how you say that, right? Drew is a great word. To draw someone is to be pulled toward, like gravity. The thing that drew me to this company, the thing that drew me to Innovatech, was the commitment to sustainability, right? Oh, maybe this is a value I have, right? And cutting-edge technology in product development. So if you're applying for a job, why do I want to work here, right? I like the maybe very direct style of communication that is well known at this company. The thing that drew me to this company is the, standard of excellence across teams, or the cutting edge technology, or whatever it is that is there that you think is interesting. Now, you want to avoid obvious things, like the thing that drew me here is the fact that I will be paid, right? Of course, you want to avoid that because hopefully you'll be paid anywhere. So you want to probably avoid things that are just personal benefits to you, right? The thing that drew me here is the benefits package that I will get if I work here. No, that's not good because it will come across probably as selfish. But if the thing that drew you here is something that is a shared value, or a shared interest that is true about this place that you have too, genuinely, authentically, then maybe it is a good one to say, okay? Maybe we want to say that the role is a good fit. This is just a statement, but I make a statement about me, my experience, my work ethic, my personality, and then those things are good for this role. Because I have these things, I'm a good fit for the role, right? I'm suitable for the role. So fit actually is a great word. Ideal fit is great too, right? So maybe you could say, my experience in leading diverse teams and driving product innovation makes me an ideal fit for this role. An ideal fit. I'm summing everything up. I'm explaining. I'm putting all the pieces together. All the stuff that I've told you so far in my introduction, I think make me the perfect person to be hired for this role. And if you've done a good job of explaining that clearly, well, then hopefully they feel the same way, right? Like it's part of its communication. Part of it is honesty. Part of it is authenticity. Part of it is the specific examples that you choose. Part of it is show, don't tell, which is to give specific examples of challenges and things that you've done, how you dealt with things. That's called show, don't tell. Putting all that together in this nice, authentic package can, if you do it well, really connect with someone. And the questions that they have then are just follow-up questions, but the introduction really is important. Now, I would encourage you to not do what we're about to do. I'm going to show you an example putting together the phrases that we've been talking about, but I strongly encourage you to not do that, to not read something or write something and then memorize it, because something that is memorized will disconnect. It's hard to hear somebody reciting something that they've memorized. You want it to sound authentic. So it's better if it's imperfect and real, not memorized, than to be memorized and kind of awkward to listen to, right? So just to be clear, I'm just giving you this as an example. I'm not telling you to do this in the future, okay? So all of that said, I'm going to look down here. I'm going to read this example. And if you have any questions about it, let me know. Let me say a bit about myself. I have a background in digital marketing, focusing on online advertising campaigns, which was a key part of my role at TechCorp. When I first started out, I was a junior software developer at a small startup where I learned Python and JavaScript. One of the biggest challenges I faced was leading a team at Global Solutions during a high-pressure project with a tight deadline. This experience pushed me to become more adaptable and skilled in crisis management. Throughout my career, I have consistently exceeded sales targets, showing a proven track record in achieving company goals. I have a knack for understanding and addressing customer needs, a skill that has always been beneficial. According to my previous colleagues, I'm highly collaborative and supportive, always ready to help the team succeed. I am at my best when working on challenging projects that require innovative thinking. The thing that drew me to this company was the commitment to sustainability and cutting-edge technology. My diverse, and I would add here, I think my diverse experience and proactive approach to working make me an ideal fit for this role. Now, put aside the fact that there are some conflicting things here in terms of experience, right? Like, okay, we're doing Python, but also there's sales. Okay, what's happening here? Put that to one side. I just wanted to show you kind of what it looks like when you put all of these phrases together, right? I'm not saying that this is perfect or coherent. In fact, I would recommend adding detail. I wanted to keep it very short. Add detail, add examples, make it more human, make it more you, right? These are great phrases to know and use, but make it your own. Don't assume that just because I gave you this, that it is the best example. It really isn't. This is the most efficient way that I could show you the examples in context, right? So add your own detail, add personality, show who you are. See if you can work some of these phrases in, but again, make it your own, all right? So if you have any questions about this, or you'd like to share your introduction, maybe you want to write how you would use these phrases, let me know, right? I'm happy to answer any questions if you have them too. Feel free, if you benefited from this, to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course in the links in the description. All right. So we have some people joining live as well, which is fantastic. Yanni and Alejandro are here, and Uzairu is here. Marcio from Brazil, thanks for your content. My pleasure. ZN from Iran, thank you so much for joining. Hello, Alejandro. Yeni, Guatemala, right, awesome. I'm in Florida, okay, great. Dominican Republic, Krapnos, Krapnos, is that how to say that correctly? I'm not sure how to correctly pronounce that. Okay, let me take a little water break here. No, it's not water. I mean, everything that's a liquid is water, right? It's coffee. Specifically, it is a type of coffee that I have. This is homemade coffee. There's a company that makes a powder for a particular type of coffee called mushroom coffee. And the mushrooms are functional mushrooms is what they're called. So lion's mane, turkey tail, cordyceps, chaga, there are some others, king trumpet, and these are mushrooms that have a sort of play a role in the body's overall health. And they made a coffee powder, and I thought, oh, I really like this coffee powder, but the bag is too small. And if I want more, then I use it too quickly. So they have a subscription thing. It comes every month. So I thought, what can I make it myself? Is it possible? So I just looked at the ingredients on the back of the bag, and it's not that many ingredients, right? There's different powders, there's
coconut powder, there's instant coffee powder. And so I just looked at the ingredients on the back and I ordered large bags of each ingredient as a powder. And then I experimented intensively. It took several hours to experiment. Actually, no, it took several days because I was testing over a couple days where I would try different combinations of these ingredients until I found the combination that tasted most like the original. And actually, I think it tastes even better. So I have not just duplicated the recipe of this mushroom coffee drink, I have improved upon it. I have improved upon it. It's better. And I did a taste test with my wife. I didn't tell her which one was which. I had the original from them and then my blend, Luke's blend, right? And I put them side by side in two separate cups. And I gave them to her and I said, which one do you like? And I didn't tell her. She tried both. She tried both again. This one, the one I made. She likes the one I made better as well. So anyway, there you have it. There you have it. You excelled at writing a text. Congrats. Could you share the text in PDF? Antonio, could you be a little more specific? Are you talking about the slides that I was sharing here? Is that what you mean? This text? If that's what you're talking about, let me know. Okay, I think we're going to move on. I think we're going to move on. We're going to talk about something that is... I was just talking about what I was drinking. Okay. Unfortunately, Antonio, I don't have it as slides. So actually, here's the thing. This that you see on screen, right? These examples, this, right? These are not slides. Okay? This is a web page that I use as slides. And it's kind of a complicated process, but I actually am using HTML to code a web page that displays text that I have that is not in a PDF in a way that I can scroll through. I mean, it's cool, but I don't have it anywhere other than here. I will see if I can. I don't know. It doesn't exist anywhere. It doesn't exist anywhere. I don't know what to tell you. It doesn't exist anywhere. It's just on a website. I think that that is the future of slides. So you shouldn't have to... I think making slides is so damn time-consuming. I hate it more than anything in the entire world. It always used to be the most time-consuming part of teaching. And I just thought, okay, there's got to be another way. Well, one way is to, you know, use a blackboard, which we're about to do, you know, to write things down as we will here, like so, right? Okay, we're going to do that. That's one approach. The other approach is, well, what you do is you write what you want in your outline. You create a simple outline, but that's the only time you do it. And then you ask, then you use a tool like Bard or ChatGPT to quickly turn the chunks of text into chunks in a web page formatted correctly, then you paste those into the web page. And if the web page is structured correctly, it will just automatically turn them into slides that you can go through. So, yeah. Let's see. Marcio says, what I like most about your content, Luke, is that you explain more than just teaching English. You help build mental positioning. Well, thank you very much, Marcio. I appreciate that. I really do. Thank you. And Alejandro says, you could screenshot the display and save it in JPG. Another thing you can do, one thing that I've been using a lot is for those who use Macs, I don't know what other, I don't know if Windows allows you to do this or has the functionality, but basically any image is selectable. The text is selectable on any image. So you can go to, or you can take a screenshot and just select all of the text. It's not very well formatted, but I gotta say, it works. It works. Shocking, shocking, but it really does. Okay, now this is just going to be a very simple thing. Okay. Let's see. Okay. You may have heard native English speakers say would have. Would of. Is it correct to say would have? You hear it all the time. If you listen carefully to movies, TV shows, native English speakers saying would have all the time. The answer is no. It is not correct. But we need to kind of understand why you hear that, and then we can get back to what this is, right? Let's try to build up from grammar. There is a tense that we can use. I'm going to write a sentence and we'll explore it, that allows you to speak in hypotheticals. A hypothetical, right? A hypothetical is a thing that is not real that we're talking about as an example, right? And so if something happens in the past and we want to talk hypothetically about that thing that happened in the past, we often use would or could, right? They allow us to explore things mentally that may be impossible. It's impossible because it's finished, it's done, right? So we use something like this. I would have gone if you had told me. All right, so what does this mean? Well, if you say I would have gone if you had told me, that means you did not tell me and I did not go. Okay, so an event, a birthday party, what's the most boring thing in the world? I don't know. A hike? That's not boring. Well, you didn't tell me, but now I know. I found out about it later. And you said, well, would have been great if you could have gone. And I say, well, I would have gone if you had told me, but you forgot to tell me. I didn't tell you? No, you didn't tell me. Oh, okay. So that's what this is for, okay? Would have. Very, very, very useful. It's usually talking about the past, speaking hypothetically about the past. I would have, maybe this is also where, not that you missed something, but somebody else did something and you're being critical of what they did, saying that your actions would have been different and maybe you would have handled it better, right? I would have said what I thought, right? Maybe someone didn't say that, and so maybe they're a coward, right? Well, if I had been in that situation, I would have spoken my mind. Okay, so that's what it's for. Anyway, now, we contract this. We contract it. A contraction is when we take two or three words and we smush them together. And we say them differently once we have done so. So you know these, right? Is not, which is of course contracted, isn't. And that thing, that this little thingy here is called an apostrophe, okay? Are not, aren't. Now, you know, this is a little weird because actually the apostrophe is between the N and the T. So the rules of contraction are a little bit fuzzy, okay? But did you know that would have has a contraction? You probably did. Well, what is that contraction? I would apostrophe V-E, and we also do C-O-U-L-D apostrophe V-E, right? So it's the last two letters of have with the other two removed and the space removed and an apostrophe instead, and now it's pronounced would've, could've. Okay, so same thing, same meaning, no difference. Sounds a little bit less formal, slightly more casual, I'd say. I would have gone if, now you will sometimes hear people say if you'd have, you'll hear people contract you would have as one contraction. You can have contractions with three words. People will say, you'd have told me. I would have gone if you'd have told me. I would have gone if you'd have told me. But one thing you'll notice here is when I say this, and to be clear, this is correct. It is the same meaning as the previous sentence we looked at. I would have gone if you had told me. I would have gone if you had told me. But one thing that you'll notice here is that it sounds like would of. Would. Why is this so slow? Why is this moving so slow? Why is my pen behind? I feel like it's got a mind of its own. All right, let's just do would of. That's what it sounds like. And so because it sounds like that, many, and I believe that this is true, native English speakers believe that what they're saying is of, not have. In their minds, they are using the word of, O-F, not have, not the contraction would have. In their minds, if you ask them to write it down on a piece of paper, they would write, I would have gone if you had told me. And so when they say it, it sounds very clearly like of. I would have, there's a clear of there. So that's the issue, is that native English speakers don't know English grammar. Why should they, right? Well, they might know it fairly well, but they maybe just don't realize that what they're saying is actually or should actually be this, not this. And so this of is wrong. It is incorrect, right? It is not right. And so what you should say when you say it is would've, could've. And do not emphasize the of. And
when you hear other people say it, just know that it's probably because they're not aware that of is incorrect. Now, okay, so they're incorrect. You still know what they mean. Does it matter? I don't think it really matters that much because we know what they mean when they say that. But I just want you to know when you hear that, that what you're hearing is a thing kind of caused by an interesting pronunciation point that the in would've, which is a contraction of would have, sounds a lot like of, thereby causing native English speakers in droves to say would of and believe that they're saying would of instead of would've. And that's it. Okay? If you have any questions about this or any other similar issues, because there are actually quite a few of these, let me know in the comments. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course in the links in the description. What's the deal with, why is this sometimes going slowly where I do this and then it slows down and it's kind of way lagging behind? It's very weird. It's very weird. I don't like it. Yeah, see, it's doing it. It's doing it. It's doing it. It's going, it's kind of lagging. Weird. I don't like that. I don't like that at all. I hate it. Burn it with fire. All right. Alejandro says, Luke, how's your wife and son? That's a good question. I'll answer that. So, good. My wife is, currently juggling being a new mom, also being at her job. She works from home, so that makes it a little easier. But there's still a transition period. It makes me realize that, wow, being a new mom is tough. And so I try to do everything I can to make that easier. But just the fact that trying to juggle those things is crazy, actually. I understand why the stay-at-home mom thing is a thing. I definitely, definitely do. And I also think it's crazy that, well, I think that instead of having a maternity leave that's sometimes 3 months, sometimes 6 months, depending, it should be a year. It should be a year. So I think women who work and have kids should be able to take an entire year off from work at full pay. I'm not saying that the company should have to pay that, but I would rather that the government provide that, because they're creating the foundation of the future. The future, the children are the future. If children are the future, then I would rather invest in supporting mothers to really focus on the first year of their child's life than, make more tanks and bombs or whatever that money gets spent on anyway, But Pymander, my son, is also doing very well. Two little bumps happening on his bottom gums, so his teeth are starting to come in. He's really self-aware. He's sitting up by himself. He's in the beginning stages of crawling. He likes to laugh a lot, and he likes to chew on stuff. If you give him anything, he'll immediately put it in his mouth. He's very funny. I think he's very, very funny. And he's funny. He's funny, and he thinks other things are funny. I think that's one thing. I don't know if it's unique, but he laughs so much, and he smiles a lot. If you look at him and you go, like that, or make a funny face, he'll go, like that. And he's 6 months old now, so... thanks for asking. PB, hello, I really like your channel. It really helped me. Let me start over. Hello, I really like your channel. It really helped everyone to learn everything about English pronunciation, and congratulations on your show. Thank you, PB, I appreciate that. Marcio says, I think about this presentation. Okay, thank you. Master of Technology. Oh, thank you. Well, apparently not. I can't get my screen share to not lag. Garoomph.
Yusuf, we know there are still many things to do, but sometimes the path seems unclear because of focusing on wrong types of activities. I sum up, I wonder about your recommendations and experiences. Thank you. Yes. Tell us strategies that we can practically and easily do to move from intermediate to upper advanced. Okay, I'll talk about that. Yusuf, sure. Alejandro says, thanks, Luke. In fact, I knew would have is actually would have. That's awesome. That's awesome. Not everybody knows that. That's great. For me, a big challenge is understanding informal contractions when I watch videos. Yeah, that's a really interesting point, Marcio, because informal contractions are maybe not even in the dictionary or technically wrong, and you see them and they're still there because you have this thing where, you know, native speakers say wrong things all the time, and that's just how it is. And so understanding what the heck are they saying, especially when there's slang and cultural references in there, right? That's a big challenge for sure. Best thing you can do is increase your exposure, immerse yourself as much as you can, right? Uzairu, thanks for your contribution. Happy to help. Okay. All right. Well, let me just quickly answer Yusuf's question here. So Yusuf says, Luke, tell us some strategies that we can practically and easily do to move from intermediate plateau to upper or advanced levels. And I think you chose perhaps the perfect word there. So a plateau is when something goes up like this and then it gets flat. And that's called a plateau. Could be a geographical formation, right? The Tibetan Plateau, for example, is this massive area of land which is, well, relatively flat, but up high, right? So you've gone up a little bit, but things leveled out. The main reason for this is that we tend to have this idea that the things we have done, which have worked for us, will always work for us. And this is true in so many different areas of life. But think about, for example, when you were in school and you had to study for an exam, right? You had to study for an exam to do well in a particular class. And so you remembered a bunch of stuff. You took the exam. And because you remembered all the stuff, you did well. Well, as you tend to go up in the educational system, right? Whether that's high school or even into university, things tend to be based less on memory and more on, let's say, critical thinking, more on synthesis, your ability to put different things together using the knowledge that you have, right? I had exams or written exams in university where they didn't care if we remembered it at all. We were allowed to open the textbooks if we wanted to. It was about using the knowledge, thinking about it, right? And then synthesizing it into a way which produced something new or showed that we really deeply understood it, not that we memorized it. And so in that case, you know, if you're using your memorization techniques to educate yourself, you're going up and up. Well, then suddenly things are no longer about how well you remember, and now it's more about how you think about them, how well you can explain your thoughts, how deeply you understand, how much research you did, right? And so I think this is a good way to think about anything from physical fitness, right? Maybe building muscle to improving your English. We tend to build up a base of vocabulary and basic knowledge understanding and use a particular set of skills or activities or, let's say, best practices to get to that point. And then we reach this plateau because we keep doing these things that got us there. And then suddenly we realize I'm not really getting better. I'm not understanding native English speakers better. I'm having trouble expressing myself, but I'm still doing I'm still working. I'm still practicing. Well, this is because the rules have changed. So once you have that solid foundation of vocabulary, once you have a pretty good grasp of English, and let's say a general foundation that maybe you either got in school or got through regular study, now the challenge is using what you know, right? You would be shocked at how many people who are actually pretty good English speakers who want to get better are still just sitting there memorizing words. It's pretty mind-blowing. There are a lot. Well, those people would be much better served if they would instead find ways to challenge themselves to use the things that they already know to improve their communication skills. That's going to improve their confidence. That's going to improve their fluency, and that's going to improve their ability to use that thing that they know without having to look for it, right? So you've memorized 20,000 words, okay. One of the things that you may find is when you're speaking in the workplace to your native English speaking colleagues, you don't sound as intelligent as you would like to, and only after that interaction do you think, ah, there's so many words I actually know that I couldn't think of in that moment. So frustrating. Well, why is that? Well, it's because you haven't practiced that sort of situation enough, right? So you have to now change the way you practice, change the way you work on your English. This may involve sitting down and writing every day, whether that's keeping a diary or maybe starting a blog or writing an article. This is using language, practicing grammar in an applied way, right? I encourage everyone to, hey, start a blog, share your thoughts, interact on Quora and Reddit. Why not? But also, practice your presentation skills. Put yourself in more challenging situations to use language, the language you already know, more often. So maybe that's volunteering more at work to communicate, to give presentations, right? To pitch ideas. Maybe that's signing up for a club. Maybe that is recording videos. Start a YouTube channel, right? Or don't, but just record yourself speaking. Put yourself in those pressure situations. Whatever situations make you feel uncomfortable or make you feel like, oh, I don't want to do that, are probably the things that you need to do next. That's the clue that that's where you need to go. The thing that's a little bit scary is the hill that takes you higher. And this hill that takes you higher is that activity which frightens you. And so you have to go through that in order to continue making progress, because the old things that you were doing just aren't going to work anymore. I'm not saying never again work on vocabulary, right? I'm working on my vocabulary. I'm just saying you have to develop a new set of activities that are going to push you further. And if you do that, if you step outside of your comfort zone and you challenge yourself to do scary things, whether that's reading a novel or keeping a diary every day in English or watching movies without subtitles or listening to podcasts in English instead of your own language or presentations at work, whatever those things are for you, push through them and you will find, oh, now I'm making progress again. You will continue your progress. So hopefully that gives you a bit of at least a pointer of where to go next, right? So if you have any other questions about this, let me know. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe, and also get a free course in the links in the description. Just a reminder. Okay. But I do have another thing that I want to get to. We're going to we're gonna do a little bit of practice. Other type of practice. What is going on? See this? I'm not doing this. There's a lag with my pen, and it's really driving me crazy. What's wrong with you, pen? Stop it. Stop. Zahin says, love from Bangladesh. Marcio says, I agree with you. Taking care of families, mom, children, we create a safe place for our future. I agree with that. Yeah, exactly. Give moms all the money. Yeah. Oh, glad to hear it, Youssef. Alejandro says, supporting what you were saying about improving your fluency, Luke, is that you have to get fluency first in what you already know and then step up further as you go. Yeah, I think there's also an input-output thing of we tend to say what I know, but not what I can do, right? So you can know a lot of things and be able to do nothing, right? Now, if you're just interested in that in English and you just want to study it and know it, great. But if you want to start using it, it's very different to know a bunch of things than to be able to use a bunch of things. These are night and day. These are two vastly different things. Yes, indeed. All right, we're going to move on. It's time to move on. For crying out loud. All right. Okay. All right. Fine. I don't know why I'm using that. An annoyed tone. I'm not actually annoyed. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Let me get my phone here. Let me clear my throat. Let me take a swig of mushroom coffee. And then head over here to ChatGPT. All right, give me one second. I'm just going to put my pen over there. And bring my phone over here. All right, and then I need to copy my prompt. All right. One of the challenging things about improving your spoken fluency is getting enough practice. You know, everybody knows if you have more conversations socially, even if it's small talk, you know, you're going to improve your confidence, probably improve your fluency over time. But we don't always have a way to have those conversations, to practice those. And so only recently did it become possible to have an anytime conversation partner with AI. Now, I believe that for those not yet really using things like ChatGPT or Google Bard, find a way to start using something, because the advantages that you get are huge, and it's only going to get more and more useful over time. And so the people who are using it compared to those not using it, will the gap between them will continue to grow, And, you know, in 5 years, it will be almost funny, the people who are using it versus those who are not, in my opinion. My humble opinion. So we're going to practice having a conversation, a small talk conversation, in as realistic a way as we possibly can using ChatGPT. So what I'm going to do is we're going to look at the prompt, I'm going to share the prompt, and then we're going to have the conversation. Now, you can't plan things with ChatGPT, so it is what it is. We'll get what we get. But so, and so there we have to put as much effort as we can into the prompt. That's why the prompt is so important, right? So here's the prompt that I'm using. Let's have a realistic dialogue based on the situation I provide. You'll play the role of Lisa, and I will be myself. So I'm me. Shock, I know. We haven't met each other before this conversation. The setting is an art gallery event in New York City, bustling with people, mingling and engaging in conversations. Start the conversation by asking, "So what do you do?" The conversation should proceed naturally from there. Respond to my questions in a realistic way and ask me follow-up questions based on my responses. The aim is to keep the conversation realistic and engaging. If you understand the situation, please confirm by saying, "I understand." And then wait for me to initiate the conversation with, "Let's begin." Okay. So many conversations with people you haven't met yet start with, "What do you do?" It may be one of the most common, it's probably the most common way to begin a conversation with a stranger or someone you don't know. What do you do? And so let's start with that, right? This is going to be a realistic conversation, as realistic as it can be. Now, what we should get here is, "I understand," and nothing else. That's what I want to see. And that's what we get. Okay, now, we want to have a real conversation, right? So what we do is go over to the app. So we go over to the app. Here we are in the app on my phone. And I'm going to hit stop because I want to find the chat. We need to go to the chat. Hold on. Let me find the chat quickly on my phone. The recent chat that we just did. And then we can begin that. I have to reload it. Where is it? Hold on. Yes, reload. Reload, hello. Oh, here we go, found it. Okay, all right. So now we have the chat open. We can see the prompt and the "I understand." Okay, now what we want to do is begin the conversation. And remember, my trigger is "Let's begin." Let's begin.
So what do you do?
I am an English teacher. I actually make courses online. How about you?
That's interesting. I work as a graphic designer, mainly focusing on digital media. It's always fascinating to meet someone involved in education, especially in the online space. What made you choose to teach English online?
Well, actually, let me ask you. So how did you get into graphic design and design? I'm quite curious. It's a pretty common job, but I know it's rapidly changing and often challenging. Do you work freelance? Well, I guess I should just ask one question. How did you get into it?
I've always been passionate about art and design. Initially, I started with traditional drawing and painting, But as technology evolved, I found myself drawn to digital art. I studied graphic design in college and started freelancing after graduation. Eventually, I transitioned to a full-time position at a design firm. The field is indeed rapidly changing, but that's part of what makes it exciting. You mentioned you're an English teacher creating online courses. How do you find that experience compared to traditional teaching?
Well, I think it's a lot more creative. I know that in traditional teaching, for example, in K through 12, you get a lot of rules and you have to follow a particular curriculum. When you teach online in particular, especially if you're helping adults learn something, you get to be a little bit more innovative. I find textbooks can be a little bit outdated and not very useful or realistic. So for something like online teaching, especially for English or languages, you need to be creative, you need to be innovative, because that's the only thing that stays current, and that's the only thing that actually, in my opinion, helps people.
That makes a lot of sense. The flexibility and creativity in online teaching sound really rewarding, especially when it comes to language learning. It must be fulfilling to create content that directly meets the needs of your students. With the world being so digitally connected, I imagine there's a great demand for innovative language learning methods. Do you focus on any particular aspect of English teaching, like business English or conversational skills?
Well, both business English, conversation skills, pronunciation, a bunch of different areas. But the thing I think that's interesting is that it's competitive. In a traditional school, there isn't a lot of competition. But among people teaching online, it's a marketplace, and so it has to actually be good and be useful in order to compete in the marketplace, right? People speak with their wallets, and I think that's a good thing. So for design, is there a future for you to maybe leverage design skills to shift to another area, or do you think you'll stick with graphic design? What are your future ambitions?
The competitive aspect of online teaching sounds both challenging and motivating. It's great that it pushes for quality and innovation. As for my career in design, the field is so broad that there's always room to explore and grow. I've considered branching into user experience UX design. It's a field that combines technology, psychology, and design, focusing on creating meaningful and accessible digital experiences. Long term, I'd love to work on projects that blend my love for art with technology, perhaps in virtual or augmented reality settings. The digital world is evolving rapidly, so I'm excited to see where it takes me. Speaking of ambitions and future plans, where do you see your online teaching heading in the next few years? Do you have any specific goals or projects in mind?
Well, I would really love to find or continue to innovate and find new ways to share information. I think that things like the metaverse are in the early days, but as AI starts to really get good and as virtual reality becomes maybe a compelling experience, I think there will be new and very exciting ways to not just share information, but communicate, to teach, and to help people in a way that really works.
That sounds incredibly forward-thinking and exciting. The potential of the metaverse and AI in education could revolutionize how we learn and interact. It's thrilling to think about the immersive and interactive experiences you could create for language learning. The blend of technology and education seems to be a space ripe for innovation. Do you envision yourself creating content for these new platforms, or perhaps collaborating with tech companies to develop educational tools? It seems like there's a lot of potential for someone with your background and vision in these emerging fields.
Okay. So now we get a transcript of the whole thing. I think the conversation went reasonably well. You know, there are always ways to tweak it. For example, if I want just to practice speaking and I don't want to listen to a lot, then I would say something like, help me by only asking questions. Specify in the prompt that it's just questions and you will be answering all the questions. However, if you want it to be more like, and I'm not saying it's 100% realistic, if you want it to be more like a real conversation, I think the back and forth is very interesting, where I ask questions and I listen to the responses, and there's something more realistic in that which simulates a real conversation. So if you were practicing, let's say, meeting people, whether you have social anxiety or you just want to practice your communication conversation skills in English, or you know want to know how to talk about different areas, you would maybe adjust the prompt slightly depending on each case, right? So I'm not saying, you know, use this, just copy and paste it. I think learning how to prompt is a really key skill. If you figure out what works for what you need and you're able to tune the prompt, then you can have really helpful conversations. I thought that one went pretty well, but I will provide the prompt if you want to try it yourself. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to hit the like button, subscribe. Feel free to ask any questions if you have them, and check out my free course in the links in the description. And if you want copy and paste, please, your setup. The prompt, I can copy and paste the prompt. Yeah, let me open up the chat and I'll just paste it in. You can try it out. But I will say, so does it work in 3.5? I think in 3.5, I don't know if they have rolled out voice chat yet in 3.5. That's the thing. So 4 has voice chat, and I think they're going to be rolling it out to 3.5 in the near future. I'm not totally sure, but let me just open up the live here and paste it into the chat, and I will also pop it into the description while I'm at it, because I did not.
Welcome to Dandelion, the most efficient and sustainable way to heat and cool. This system works by moving heat from the ground.
Hold on. Copy and paste. Oh, it's too long. Oh, no. Okay, I have to do it in chunks. Too long for a YouTube comment. Darn. I would encourage you to really play around with this and not just copy and paste, right? Okay, so there's chunk 1. I have to do this in chunks. We have met. Okay, there's chunk 2. There is chunk 3. And chunk 4. This should all be together, but I'm just doing it in chunks because of the limitations of YouTube comments. And there's the last chunk. Okay. And again, let me pop that into the description too while I'm at it. While I'm at it, those listening or watching later, or that means not live, feel free to go to YouTube and find our Meeting People episode, and you will see if you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see the prompt that I used at the bottom. Okay, and you can just copy and paste that and use it. I go into much more depth in my course. I have a whole course, it's quite a few hours long, on this topic, but this is a good sort of starter to just play with it, right? Okay. All right, there we go. Save. Good. Sorry for the delay. All right, you know what? I'm getting messages that dinner is ready, so it's time to go eat dinner. I really appreciate everyone for joining. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want, you can join the Discord. That is free to join. You can reach out to me there and also get updates about new stuff. If you want to get a discount on the yearly membership but pay monthly, that means access to the courses. That is on the website and the links in the description. There is a 30% discount, which is the yearly membership price, but you can pay monthly. Ooh la la. What else? Yes, like and subscribe, of course. Thanks for all the great questions and comments for those joining live. Most appreciated. I hope you have a great week or weekend. Good luck. Let me know if you have any questions or comments. Take care. Stay safe. And I'll see you in the next one. Bye.